They didn't close tonight.
Chapter 37. Thomas was speechless. Everything would be different now. No sun, no supplies, no protection from the grievers. Teresa had been right from the beginning. Everything had changed. Thomas felt as if his breath had solidified, lodged itself in his throat. Albie pointed at the girl.
I want her locked up.
Now, Billy, Jackson, put her in the slammer and ignore every word that comes out of her shuck mouth.
Teresa didn't react, but Thomas did enough for the both of them.
What are you talking about? Albie, you can't...
He stopped when Albie's fiery eyes shot such a look of anger at him he felt his heart stutter.
But how could you possibly blame her for the walls not closing?
Newt stepped up, lightly placed a hand on Albie's chest, and pushed him back.
How could we not, Tommy? She bloody admitted it herself.
Thomas turned to look at Teresa, paled at the sadness in her blue eyes. It felt like something had reached through his chest and squeezed his heart.
Just be glad you ain't going with her, Thomas, Albie said.
He gave both of them one last glare before leaving. Thomas had never wanted so badly to punch someone. Billy and Jackson came forward and grabbed Teresa by both arms, started escorting her away. Before they could enter the trees, though, Newt stopped them.
Stay with her. I don't care what happens. No one's going to touch this girl. Swear your lives on it.
The two guards nodded, then walked away, Teresa in tow. It hurt Thomas even more to see how willingly she went, and he couldn't believe how sad he felt. He wanted to keep talking to her.
But I just met her, he thought. I don't even know her.
Yet he knew that wasn't true. He already felt a closeness that could only have come from knowing her before the memory-wiped existence of the glade.
Come see me, she said in his mind.
He didn't know how to do it, how to talk to her like that. But he tried anyway.
I will. At least you'll be safe in there.
She didn't respond.
Teresa?
Nothing. The next 30 minutes were an eruption of mass confusion. Though there had been no discernible change in the light since the sun and blue sky hadn't appeared that morning, it still felt like a darkness spread over the glade. As Newt and Albie gathered the keepers and put them in charge of making assignments and getting their groups inside the homestead within the hour, Thomas felt like nothing more than a spectator, not sure how he could help. The builders, without their leader, Galley, who was still missing, were ordered to put up barricades at each open door. They obeyed, although Thomas knew there wasn't enough time and there weren't materials to do much good. It almost seemed to him as if the keepers wanted people busy, wanted to delay the inevitable panic attacks. Thomas helped as the builders gathered every loose item they could find and piled them in the gaps, nailing things together as best they could. It looked ugly and pathetic and scared him to death. No way that'd keep the grievers out. As Thomas worked, he caught glimpses of the other jobs going on across the glade. Every flashlight in the compound was gathered and distributed to as many people as possible. Newt said he planned for everyone to sleep in the homestead that night, and that they'd kill the lights except for emergencies. Frypan's task was to take all the non-perishable food out of the kitchens and store it in the homestead, in case they got trapped there. Thomas could only imagine how horrible that'd be. Others were gathering supplies and tools. Thomas saw Min-Ho carrying weapons from the basement to the main building. Albie had made it clear they could take no chances. They'd make the homestead their fortress and must do whatever it took to defend it. Thomas finally snuck away from the builders and helped Min-Ho, carrying up boxes of knives and barbed wire-wrapped clubs. Then Min-Ho said he had a special assignment from Newt and more or less told Thomas to get lost, refusing to answer any of his questions. This hurt Thomas's feelings, but he left anyway, really wanting to talk to Newt about something else. He finally found him, crossing the glade on his way to the bloodhouse.
Newt! He called out, running to catch up. You have to listen to me!
Newt stopped so suddenly Thomas almost ran into him. The older boy turned to give Thomas such an annoyed look he thought twice about saying anything.
Make it quick, Newt said.
Thomas almost balked, not sure how to say what he was thinking.
You've got to let the girl go, Teresa.
He knew that she could only help, that she might still remember something valuable.
Ah, glad to know you guys are buddies now.
Newt started walking off.
Don't waste my time, Tommy.
Thomas grabbed his arm.
Listen to me. There's something about her. I think she and I were sent here to help end this whole thing.
Yeah, end it by letting the bloody grievers waltz in here and kill us? I've heard some sucky plans in my day, Granny, but that's got 'em all beat.
Thomas groaned, wanting Newt to know how frustrated he felt.
No, I don't think that's what it means. The wall's not closing.
Newt folded his arms. He looked exasperated.
Greeny, what are you yapping about?
Ever since Thomas had seen the words on the wall of the maze, World in Catastrophe, Kill Zone Experiment Department, he'd been thinking about them. He knew if there was anyone who would believe him, it would be Newt.
I think we're here as part of some weird experiment or test or something like that. But it's supposed to end somehow. We can't live here forever. Whoever sent us here wants it to end, one way or another.
Thomas was relieved to get it off his chest.
Newt rubbed his eyes.
And that's supposed to convince me that everything's jolly, that I should let the girl go, because she came and everything is suddenly do or die?
No, you're missing the point. I don't think she has anything to do with us being here. She's just a pawn. They set her here as our last tool, or hint, or whatever, to help us get out.
Thomas took a deep breath.
And I think they sent me too. Just because she was the trigger for the ending doesn't make her bad.
Newt looked toward the slammer.
You know what? I don't bug and care right now. She can handle one night in there. If anything, she'll be safer than us.
Thomas nodded, sensing a compromise.
Okay, we get through tonight somehow. Tomorrow, when we have a whole day of safety, we can figure out what to do with her. Figure out what we're supposed to do.
Newt snorted.
Tommy, what's going to make tomorrow any different? It's been 2 bloody years, you know?
Thomas had an overwhelming feeling that all of these changes were a spur, a catalyst for the end game.
Because now we have to solve it. We'll be forced to. We can't live that way anymore, day to day, thinking that what matters most is getting back to the glade before the doors close, snug and safe.
Newt thought a minute as he stood there, the bustle of the glader preparations surrounding both of them.
Dig deeper. Stay out there while the walls move.
Exactly, Thomas said. That's exactly what I'm talking about. And maybe we could barricade or blow up the entrance to the Griever hole. Buy time to analyze the maze.
Albie's the one who won't let the girl out, Newt said with a nod toward the homestead.
That guy's not too high on you two, Shanks. But right now we just gotta slim ourselves and get to the wake-up.
Thomas nodded.
We can fight him off. Done it before, haven't you, Hercules?
Without smiling or even waiting for a response, Newt walked away, yelling at people to finish up and get inside the homestead. Thomas was happy with the conversation. It had gone about as well as he could have possibly hoped. He decided to hurry and talk to Teresa before it was too late. As he sprinted for the slammer on the backside of the homestead, he watched as gladers started moving inside, most of them with arms full of one thing or another. Thomas pulled up outside the small jail and caught his breath.
Teresa?
He finally asked through the barred window of the lightless cell. Her face popped up on the other side, startling him. He let out a small yelp before he could stop it. It took him a second to recover his wits.
You can be downright spooky, you know?
That's very sweet, she said. Thanks.
In the darkness, her blue eyes seemed to glow like a cat's.
You're welcome,
he answered, ignoring her sarcasm.
Listen, I've been thinking.
He paused to gather his thoughts.
More than I can say for that Albie schmuck, she muttered.
Thomas agreed, but was anxious to say what he'd come to say.
There's gotta be a way out of this place. We just have to push it, stay out in the maze longer. And what you wrote on your arm, and what you said about a code, it all has to mean something, right? It has to, he thought.
He couldn't help feeling some hope.
Yeah, I've been thinking the same thing. But first, can't you get me out of here?
Her hands appeared, gripping the bars of the window. Thomas felt the ridiculous urge to reach out and touch them.
Well,
Newt said maybe tomorrow.
Thomas was just glad he'd gotten that much of a concession. You'll have to make it through the night in there. It might actually be the safest place in the glade.
Thanks for asking him. Should be fun sleeping on this cold floor.
She motioned behind her with a thumb.
Though I guess a griever can't squeeze through this window, so I'll be happy, right?
The mention of grievers surprised him. He didn't remember talking about them to her yet.
Teresa, are you sure you've forgotten everything?
She thought a second.
It's weird. I guess I do remember some stuff. Unless I just heard people talking while I was in the coma.
Well, I guess it doesn't matter right now. I just wanted to see you before I went inside for the night.
But he didn't want to leave.
He almost wished he could get thrown in the slammer with her. He grinned inside. He could only imagine Newt's response to that request.
Tom,
Teresa said. Thomas realized he was staring off in a daze.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah? Her hand slipped back inside, disappeared. All he could see were her eyes, the pale glow of her white skin.
I don't know if I can do this. Stay in this jail all night.
Thomas felt an incredible sadness. He wanted to steal Newt's keys and help her escape. But he knew that was a ridiculous idea. She'd just have to suffer and make do. He stared into those glowing eyes.
At least it won't get completely dark. Looks like we're stuck with this twilight junk 24 hours a day now. Yeah.
She looked past him at the homestead, then focused on him again.
I'm a tough girl. I'll be okay.
Thomas felt horrible leaving her there, but he knew he had no choice.
I'll make sure they let you out first thing tomorrow, okay?
She smiled, making him feel better.
That's a promise, right?
Promise. Thomas tapped his right temple.
And if you get lonely, you can talk to me with your
trick all you want. I'll try to answer back. He'd accepted it now, almost wanted it. He just hoped he could figure out how to talk back, so they could have a conversation.
You'll get it soon,
Teresa said in his mind. I wish. He stood there, really not wanting to leave. At all.
You better go, she said. I don't want your brutal murder on my conscience.
Thomas managed his own smile at that.
All right. See you tomorrow.
And before he could change his mind, he slipped away, heading around the corner toward the front door of the homestead, just as the last couple of gladers were entering, Newt shooing them in like errant chickens. Thomas stepped inside as well, followed by Newt, who closed the door behind him. Just before it latched shut, Thomas thought he heard the first eerie moan of the grievers, coming from somewhere deep in the maze. The night had begun. Chapter 38. Most of them slept outside in normal times, so packing all those bodies into the homestead made for a tight fit. The keepers had organized and distributed the gladers throughout the rooms, along with blankets and pillows. Despite the number of people and the chaos of such a change, a disturbing silence hung over the activities, as if no one wanted to draw attention to themselves. When everyone was settled, Thomas found himself upstairs with Newt, Albi, and Min-ho, and they were finally able to finish their discussion from earlier in the courtyard. Albi and Newt sat on the only bed in the room, while Thomas and Min-ho sat next to them in chairs. The only other furniture was a crooked wooden dresser and a small table, on top of which rested a lamp providing what light they had. The gray darkness seemed to press on the windows from outside, with promises of bad things to come.
"Closest I've come so far," Newt was saying, "to hanging it all up. Shuck it all and kiss a griever goodnight. Supplies cut, bloody gray skies, walls not closing. But we can't give up, and we all know it. The buggers who sent us here either want us dead, or they're giving us a spur. This or that, we gotta work our asses off till we're dead or not dead."
Thomas nodded, but didn't say anything. He agreed completely, but had no concrete ideas on what to do. If he could just make it to tomorrow, maybe he and Teresa could come up with something to help. Thomas glanced over at Albi, who was staring at the floor, seemingly lost in his own gloomy thoughts. His face still wore the long, weary look of depression,
his eyes sunken and hollow. The changing had been aptly named, considering what it had done to him.
"Albie," Newt asked, "are you going to pitch in?"
Albie looked up, surprise crossing his face, as if he hadn't known that anyone else was in the room.
"Huh? Oh, yeah. Good, that. But you've seen what happens at night. Just because Greeny the freaking Superboy made it doesn't mean the rest of us can."
Thomas rolled his eyes ever so slightly at Min-Ho, so tired of Albie's attitude. If Min-Ho felt the same way, he did a good job of hiding it.
"I'm with Thomas and Newt. We gotta quit boo-hooing and feeling sorry for ourselves."
He rubbed his hands together and sat forward in his chair. "Tomorrow morning, first thing, you guys can assign teams to study the maps full-time while the runners go out. We'll pack our stuff shuck full so we can stay out there a few days."
"What?"
Albie asked, his voice finally showing some emotion.
"What do you mean, days?"
"I mean days. With open doors and no sunset, there's no point in coming back here anyway. Time to stay out there and see if anything opens up when the walls move. If they still move."
"No way," Albie said. "We have the homestead to hide in, and if that ain't working, the map room and the slammer. We can't freaking ask people to go out there and die, Min-Ho. Who'd volunteer for that?"
"Me," Min-Ho said. "And Thomas." Everyone looked at Thomas. He simply nodded. Although it scared him to death, exploring the maze, really exploring it, was something he'd wanted to do from the first time he learned about it.
"I will if I have to,"
Newt said, surprising Thomas. Though he'd never talk about it, the older boy's limp was a constant reminder that something horrible had happened to him out in the maze.
"And I'm sure all the runners will do it." "With your bum leg?"
Albie asked, a harsh laugh escaping his lips. Newt frowned, looked at the ground.
"Well, I don't feel good asking Gladers to do something if I'm not bloody willing to do it myself."
Albie scooted back on the bed and propped his feet up.
"Whatever. Do what you want."
"Do what I want?" Newt asked, standing up.
"What's wrong with you, man? Are you telling me we have a choice? Should we just sit around on our butts and wait to be snuffed by the Grievers?"
Thomas wanted to stand up and cheer, sure that Albie would finally snap out of his doldrums. But their leader didn't look in the least bit reprimanded or remorseful.
"Well, it sounds better than running to them."
Newt sat back down.
"Albie, you gotta start talking reason."
As much as he hated to admit it, Thomas knew they needed Albie if they were going to accomplish anything. The Gladers looked up to him. Albie finally took a deep breath, then looked at each of them in turn.
"You guys know I'm all screwed up. Seriously, I'm sorry. I shouldn't be the stupid leader anymore."
Thomas held his breath. He couldn't believe Albie had just said that.
"Oh, bloody," Newt started.
"No," Albie shouted, his face showing humility, surrender.
"That's not what I mean. Listen to me. I ain't saying we should switch or any of that clunk. I'm just saying, I think I need to let you guys make the decisions. I don't trust myself. So, yeah, I'll do whatever."
Thomas could see that both Min-Ho and Newt were as surprised as he was.
Okay,
Newt said slowly, as if he was unsure.
"We'll make it work. I promise. You'll see."
"Yeah," Albie muttered. After a long pause, he spoke up, a hint of odd excitement in his voice.
"Hey, tell you what. Put me in charge of the maps. I'll freaking work every glader to the bone studying those things."
"Works for me," Min-Ho said. Thomas wanted to agree, but he didn't know if it was his place. Albie put his feet back on the floor, sat up straighter.
"You know, it was really stupid for us to sleep in here tonight. We should have been out in the map room working."
Thomas thought that was the smartest thing he'd heard Albie say in a long time. Min-Ho shrugged.
"Probably right."
"Well, I'll go," Albie said with a confident nod.
"Right now."
Newt shook his head.
"Forget that, Albie. Already heard the bloody Grievers moaning out there. We can wait till they wake up."
Albie leaned forward, elbows on his knees.
"Hey, you shucks are the ones giving me all the pep talks. Don't start whining when I actually listen. If I'm gonna do this, I gotta do it. Be the old me. I need something to dive into.
Relief flooded Thomas. He'd grown sick of all the contention. Albie stood up.
Seriously, I need this.
He moved toward the door of the room as if he really meant to leave.
You can't be serious, Newt said. You can't go out there now.
I'm going, and that's that.
Albie took his ring of keys from his pocket and rattled them mockingly. Thomas couldn't believe the sudden bravery.
See you shucks in the morning.
And then he walked out. It was strange to know that the night grew later, that darkness should have swallowed the world around them, but to see only the pale gray light outside. It made Thomas feel off-kilter, as if the urge to sleep that grew steadily with every passing minute were somehow unnatural. Time slowed to an agonizing crawl. He felt as if the next day might never come. The other gladers settled themselves, turning in with their pillows and blankets for the impossible task of sleeping. No one said much, the mood somber and grim. All you could hear were quiet shuffles and whispers. Thomas tried hard to force himself to sleep, knowing it would make the time pass faster. But after 2 hours, he'd still had no luck. He lay on the floor in one of the upper rooms, on top of a thick blanket, several other gladers crammed in there with him, almost body to body. The bed had gone to Newt. Chuck had ended up in another room, and for some reason, Thomas pictured him huddled in a dark corner, crying, squeezing his blankets to his chest like a teddy bear. The image saddened Thomas so deeply he tried to replace it, but to no avail. Almost every person had a flashlight by their side in case of emergency. Otherwise, Newt had ordered all lights extinguished despite the pale, deathly glow of their new sky. No sense attracting any more attention than necessary. Anything that could be done on such short notice to prepare for a griever attack had been done. Windows boarded up, furniture moved in front of doors, knives handed out as weapons. But none of that made Thomas feel safe. The anticipation of what might happen was overpowering. A suffocating blanket of misery and fear that began to take on a life of its own. He almost wished the suckers would just come and get it over with. The waiting was unbearable. The distant wails of the grievers grew closer as the night stretched on. Every minute seemed to last longer than the one before it. Another hour passed, then another. Sleep finally came, but in miserable fits. Thomas guessed it was about 2 in the morning when he turned from his back to his stomach for the millionth time that night. He put his hands under his chin and stared at the foot of the bed, almost a shadow in the dim light. Then everything changed. A mechanized surge of machinery sounded from outside, followed by the familiar rolling clicks of a griever on the stony ground, as if someone had scattered a handful of nails. Thomas shot to his feet, as did most of the others. But Newt was up before anyone, waving his arms, then shushing the room by putting a finger to his lips. Favoring his bad leg, he tiptoed toward the lone window in the room, which was covered by 3 hastily nailed boards. Large cracks allowed for plenty of space to peek outside. Carefully, Newt leaned in to take a look, and Thomas crept over to join him. He crouched below Newt against the lowest of the wooden boards, pressing his eye against a crack. It was terrifying being so close to the wall. But all he saw was the open glade. He didn't have enough space to look up or down or to the side, just straight ahead. After a minute or so, he gave up and turned to sit with his back against the wall. Newt walked over and sat back down on the bed. A few minutes passed, various griever sounds penetrating the walls every 10 to 20 seconds. The squeal of small engines followed by a grinding spin of metal. The clicking of spikes against the hard stone. Things snapping and opening and snapping. Thomas winced in fear every time he heard something. Sounded like 3 or 4 of them were just outside. At least. He heard the twisted animal machines come closer, so close, waiting on the stone blocks below. All hums and metallic clatter. Thomas's mouth dried up. He'd seen them face to face, remembered it all too well. He had to remind himself to breathe. The others in the room were still. No one made a sound. Fear seemed to hover in the air like a blizzard of black snow. One of the grievers sounded like it was moving toward the house. Then the clicking of its spike against the stone suddenly turned into a deeper, hollower sound. Thomas could picture it all. The creature's metal spikes digging into the wooden sides of the homestead. The massive creature rolling its body, climbing up toward their room, defying gravity with its strength. Thomas heard the griever's spikes shred the wood siding in their path as they tore out and rotated around to take hold once again. The whole building shuddered. The crunching and groaning and snapping of the wood became the only sounds in the world to Thomas, horrifying. They grew louder, closer. The other boys had shuffled across the room and as far away from the window as possible. Thomas finally followed suit, Newt right beside him. Everyone huddled against the far wall, staring at the window. Just when it grew unbearable, just as Thomas realized the griever was right outside the window, everything fell silent. Thomas could almost hear his own heart beating. Lights flickered out there, casting odd beams through the cracks between the wooden boards. Then a thin shadow interrupted the light, moving back and forth. Thomas knew that the griever's probes and weapons had come out, searching for a feast. He imagined beetle blades out there, helping the creatures find their way. A few seconds later, the shadow stopped. The light settled to a standstill, casting three unmoving planes of brightness into the room. The tension in the air was thick. Thomas couldn't hear anyone breathing. He thought much the same must be going on in the other rooms of the homestead. Then he remembered Teresa in the slammer. He was just wishing she'd say something to him when the door from the hallway suddenly whipped open. Gasps and shouts exploded throughout the room. The gladers had been expecting something from the window, not from behind them. Thomas turned to see who'd opened the door, expecting a frightened Chuck or maybe a reconsidering Albie. But when he saw who stood there, his skull seemed to contract, squeezing his brain in shock. It was Gally. Chapter 39. Gally's eyes raged with lunacy. His clothes were torn and filthy. He dropped to his knees and stayed there, his chest heaving with deep, sucking breaths. He looked about the room like a rabid dog searching for someone to bite. No one said a word. It was as if they all believed, as Thomas did, that Gally was only a figment of their imagination.
"They'll kill you!"
Gally screamed, spittle flying everywhere.
"The grievers will kill you all! One every night till it's over!"
Thomas watched, speechless, as Gally staggered to his feet and walked forward, dragging his right leg with a heavy limp. No one in the room moved a muscle as they watched, obviously too stunned to do anything. Even Newt stood mouth agape. Thomas was almost more afraid of their surprise visitor than he was of the grievers just outside the window. Gally stopped, standing just a few feet in front of Thomas and Newt. He pointed at Thomas with a bloody finger.
"You,"
he said with a sneer so pronounced it went past comical to flat-out disturbing.
"It's all your fault."
Without warning, he swung his left hand, forming it into a fist as it came around and crashed into Thomas's ear. Crying out, Thomas crumpled to the ground, more taken by surprise than pain. He scrambled to his feet as soon as he'd hit the floor. Newt had finally snapped out of his daze and pushed Gally away. Gally stumbled backward and crashed into the desk by the window. The lamp scooted off the side and broke into pieces on the ground. Thomas assumed Gally would retaliate, but he straightened instead, taking everyone in with his mad gaze.
"It can't be solved," he said,
his voice now quiet and distant, spooky.
"The Shuck Maze'll kill all you shanks. The grievers'll kill you. One every night till it's over. It's better this way."
His eyes fell to the floor.
"They'll only kill you one a night. They're stupid variables."
Thomas listened in awe, trying to suppress his fear so he could memorize everything the crazed boy said. Newt took a step forward.
Galley, shut your bloody hole. There's a griever right out the window. Just sit on your butt and be quiet. Maybe it'll go away.
Galley looked up, his eyes narrowing.
You don't get it, Newt. You're too stupid. You've always been too stupid. There's no way out. There's no way to win. They're gonna kill you. All of you. One by one.
Screaming the last word, Galley threw his body toward the window and started tearing at the wooden boards like a wild animal trying to escape a cage. Before Thomas or anyone else could react, he'd already ripped one board free. He threw it to the ground.
No!
Newt yelled, running forward. Thomas followed to help, in utter disbelief at what was happening. Galley ripped off the second board just as Newt reached him. He swung it backward with both hands and connected with Newt's head, sent him sprawling across the bed as a small spray of blood sprinkled the sheets. Thomas pulled up short, readying himself for a fight.
Galley!
Thomas yelled.
What are you doing?
The boy spat on the ground, panting like a winded dog.
You shut your shuck face, Thomas. You shut up. I know who you are, but I don't care anymore. I can only do what's right.
Thomas felt as if his feet were rooted to the ground. He was completely baffled by what Galley was saying. He watched the boy reach back and rip loose the final wooden board. The instant the discarded slab hit the floor of the room, the glass of the window exploded inward like a swarm of crystal wasps. Thomas covered his face and fell to the floor, kicking his legs out to scoot his body as far away as possible. When he bumped into the bed, he gathered himself and looked up, ready to face his world coming to an end. A griever's pulsating, bulbous body had squirmed halfway through the destroyed window, metallic arms with pincers snapping and clawing in all directions. Thomas was so terrified, he barely registered that everyone else in the room had fled to the hallway, all except Newt, who lay unconscious on the bed. Frozen, Thomas watched as one of the griever's long arms reached for the lifeless body. That was all it took to break him from his fear. He scrambled to his feet, searched the floor around him for a weapon. All he saw were knives. They couldn't help him now. Panic exploded within him, consumed him. Then Galley was speaking again. The griever pulled back its arm as if it needed the thing to be able to observe and listen. But its body kept churning, trying to squeeze its way inside.
No one ever understood!
The boy screamed over the horrible noise of the creature, crunching its way deeper into the homestead, ripping the wall to pieces.
No one ever understood what I saw! What the changing did to me! Don't go back to the real world, Thomas! You don't want to remember!
Galley gave Thomas a long, haunted look, his eyes full of terror. Then he turned and dove onto the writhing body of the griever. Thomas yelled out as he watched every extended arm of the monster immediately retract and clasp onto Galley's arms and legs, making escape or rescue impossible. The boy's body sank several inches into the creature's squishy flesh, making a horrific squelching sound. Then, with surprising speed, the griever pushed itself back outside the shattered frame of the window and began descending toward the ground below. Thomas ran to the jagged, gaping hole, looking down just in time to see the griever land and start scooting across the glade, Galley's body appearing and disappearing as the thing rolled. The lights of the monster shone brightly, casting an eerie yellow glow across the stone of the open west door, where the griever exited into the depths of the maze. Then, seconds later, several other monsters followed close behind their companion, whirring and clicking as if celebrating their victory. Thomas was sickened to the verge of throwing up. He began to back away from the window, but something outside caught his eye. He quickly leaned out of the building to get a better look. A lone shape was sprinting across the courtyard of the glade toward the exit through which Gally had just been taken. Despite the poor light, Thomas realized who it was immediately. He screamed, yelled at him to stop, but it was too late. Min Ho, running full speed, disappeared into the maze. Chapter 40 Lights blazed throughout the homestead. Gladers ran about, everyone talking at once. A couple of boys cried in a corner. Chaos ruled. Thomas ignored all of it. He ran into the hallway, then leaped down the stairs three at a time. He pushed his way through a crowd in the foyer, tore out of the homestead and toward the west door, sprinting. He pulled up just short of the threshold of the maze, his instincts forcing him to think twice about entering. Newt called to him from behind, delaying the decision.
Min Ho followed it out there,
Thomas yelled when Newt caught up to him, a small towel pressed against the wound on his head. A patchy spot of blood had already seeped through the white material.
I saw, Newt said, pulling the towel away to look at it.
He grimaced and put it back.
Shuck it, that hurts like a mother. Min Ho must have finally fried his last bit of brain cells, not to mention Gally. Always knew he was crazy.
Thomas could only worry about Min Ho.
I'm going after him. Time to be a bloody hero again.
Thomas looked at Newt sharply, hurt by the rebuke.
You think I'd do things to impress you, Shanks? Please.
All I care about is getting out of here.
Yeah, well, you're a regular toughie. But right now we've got worse problems.
What? Thomas knew if he wanted to catch up with Min Ho, he had no time for this.
Somebody, Newt began.
There he is,
Thomas shouted. Min Ho had just turned a corner up ahead and was coming straight for them. Thomas cupped his hands.
What were you doing, idiot?
Min Ho waited until he made it back through the door, then bent over, hands on his knees, and sucked in a few breaths before answering.
I just wanted to make sure.
Make sure of what? Newt asked.
Lot of good you'd be, taken with Gally.
Min Ho straightened and put his hands on his hips, still breathing heavily.
Slim it, boys. I just wanted to see if they went toward the cliff, toward the Griever hole.
And? Thomas said.
Bingo.
Min Ho wiped sweat from his forehead.
I just can't believe it,
Newt said, almost whispering.
What a night.
Thomas's thoughts tried to drift toward the hole and what it all meant, but he couldn't shake the thought of what Newt had been about to say before they saw Min Ho return.
What were you about to tell me? He asked.
You said we had worse...
Yeah.
Newt pointed his thumb over his shoulder.
You can still see the bug and smoke.
Thomas looked in that direction. The heavy metal door of the map room was slightly ajar, a wispy trail of black smoke drifting out and into the gray sky.
Somebody burned the map trunks, Newt said. Every last one of them.
For some reason, Thomas didn't care about the maps that much. They seemed pointless anyway. He stood outside the window of the slammer, having left Newt and Min Ho when they went to investigate the sabotage of the map room. Thomas had noticed them exchange an odd look before they split up, almost as if communicating some secret with their eyes. But Thomas could think of only one thing.
Teresa?
He asked. Her face appeared, hands rubbing her eyes.
Was anybody killed?
She asked, somewhat groggy.
Were you sleeping?
Thomas asked. He was relieved to see that she appeared okay, felt himself relax.
I was, she responded, until I heard something shred the homestead to bits. What happened?
Thomas shook his head in disbelief.
I don't know how you could have slept through the sound of all those grievers out there. You try coming out of a coma sometime. See how you do. Now answer my question,
she said inside his head. Thomas blinked, momentarily surprised by the voice, since she hadn't done it in a while.
Cut that junk out. Just tell me what happened.
Thomas sighed. It was such a long story, and he didn't feel like telling the whole thing.
You don't know Gally, but he's a psycho kid who ran away. He showed up, jumped on a griever, and they all took off into the maze. It was really weird.
He still couldn't believe it had actually happened. Which is saying a lot, Teresa said.
Yeah. He looked behind him, hoping to see Albie somewhere. Surely he'd let Teresa out now. Gladers were scattered all over the complex, but there was no sign of their leader. He turned back to Teresa.
I just don't get it. Why would the Grievers have left after getting Gally?
He said something about them killing us one a night until we were all dead. He said it at least twice.
Teresa put her hands through the bars, rested her forearms against the concrete sill.
Just one a night? Why?
I don't know. He also said it had to do with trials, or variables, something like that.
Thomas had the same strange urge he'd had the night before, to reach out and take one of her hands. He stopped himself, though.
Tom, I was thinking about what you told me I said, that the maze is a code. Being holed up in here does wonders for making the brain do what it was made for.
What do you think it means?
Intensely interested, he tried to block out the shouts and chatter rumbling through the glade as others found out about the map room being burned.
Well, the walls move every day, right?
Yeah. He could tell she was really onto something.
And Minho said they think there's a pattern, right?
Right.
Gears were starting to shift into place inside Thomas's head as well, almost as if a prior memory was beginning to break loose.
Well, I can't remember why I said that to you about the code. I know when I was coming out of the coma, all sorts of thoughts and memories swirled through my head like crazy, almost as if I could feel someone emptying my mind, sucking them out. And I felt like I needed to say that thing about the code before I lost it. So there must be an important reason.
Thomas almost didn't hear. He was thinking harder than he had in a while.
They always compare each section's map to the one from the day before, and the day before that, and the day before that, day by day, each runner just analyzing their own section.
What if they're supposed to compare the maps to other sections?
He trailed off, feeling like he was on the cusp of something.
Teresa seemed to ignore him, doing her own theorizing.
The first thing the word code makes me think of is letters. Letters in the alphabet. Maybe the maze is trying to spell something.
Everything came together so quickly in Thomas's mind, he almost heard an audible click, as if the pieces all snapped into place at once.
You're right! You're right! But the runners had been looking at it wrong this whole time. They've been analyzing it the wrong way.
Teresa gripped the bars now, her knuckles white, her face pressed against the iron rods.
What? What are you talking about?
Thomas grabbed the two bars outside of where she held on, moved close enough to smell her, a surprisingly pleasant scent of sweat and flowers.
Minho said the patterns repeat themselves, only they can't figure out what it means. But they've always studied them section by section, comparing one day to the next. What if each day is a separate piece of the code, and they're supposed to use all eight sections together somehow?
You think maybe each day is trying to reveal a word? Teresa asked.
With the wall movements?
Thomas nodded.
Or maybe a letter a day, I don't know. But they've always thought the movements would reveal how to escape, not spell something. They've been studying it like a map, not like a picture of something. We've got to...
Then he stopped, remembering what he'd just been told by Newt.
Oh, no.
Teresa's eyes flared with worry.
What's wrong?
Oh, no, oh, no, oh, no. Thomas let go of the bars and stumbled back a step as the realization hit him. He turned to look at the map room. The smoke had lessened, but it still wafted out the door, a dark, hazy cloud covering the entire area.
What's wrong?
Teresa repeated. She couldn't see the map room from her angle. Thomas faced her again.
I didn't think it mattered.
What? She demanded.
Someone burned all the maps. If there was a code, it's gone.
Chapter 41
I'll be back, Thomas said, turning to go. His stomach was full of acid.
I gotta find Newt, see if any of the maps survived.
Wait, Teresa yelled.
Get me out of here.
But there was no time, and Thomas felt awful about it.
I can't. I'll be back, I promise.
He turned before she could protest
and set off at a sprint for the map room in its foggy black cloud of smoke. Needles of pain pricked his insides. If Teresa was right, and they'd been that close to figuring out some kind of clue to get out of there, only to see it literally lost in flames, it was so upsetting it hurt. The first thing Thomas saw when he ran up was a group of gladers huddled just outside the large steel door, still ajar, its outer edge blackened with soot. But as he got closer, he realized they were surrounding something on the ground, all of them looking down at it. He spotted Newt, kneeling there in the middle, leaning over a body. Minho was standing behind him, looking distraught and dirty, and spotted Thomas first.
"Where'd you go?" he asked.
"To talk to Teresa. What happened?" He waited anxiously for the next dump of bad news. Minho's forehead creased in anger.
"Our map room was set on fire, and you ran off to talk to your shuck girlfriend? What's wrong with you?"
Thomas knew the rebuke should have stung, but his mind was too preoccupied.
"I didn't think it mattered anymore. If you haven't figured out the maps by now..."
Minho looked disgusted, the pale light and fog of smoke making his face seem almost sinister.
"Yeah, this'd be a great freaking time to give up. What the...
I'm sorry. Just tell me what happened." Thomas leaned over the shoulder of a skinny boy standing in front of him to get a look at the body on the ground. It was Albie, flat on his back, a huge gash on his forehead. Blood seeped down both sides of his head, some into his eyes, crusting there. Newt was cleaning it with a wet rag, gingerly, asking questions in a whisper too low to hear. Thomas, concerned for Albie despite his recent ill-tempered ways, turned back to Minho and repeated his question.
"Winston found him out here, half dead, the map room blazing. Some shanks got in there and put it out, but way too late. All the trunks are burned to a freaking crisp. I suspected Albie at first, but whoever did it slammed his shuck head against the table. You can see where. It's nasty."
"Who do you think did it?" Thomas was hesitant to tell him about the possible discovery he and Teresa had made. With no maps, the point was moot.
"Maybe Galley before he showed up in the homestead and went psycho? Maybe the Grievers? I don't know, and I don't care. Doesn't matter."
Thomas was surprised at the sudden change of heart.
"Now who's the one giving up?"
Minho's head snapped up so quickly, Thomas took a step backward. There was a flash of anger there, but it quickly melted into an odd expression of surprise or confusion.
"That's not what I meant, Shank."
Thomas narrowed his eyes in curiosity.
"What did? Just shut your hole for now."
Minho put his fingers to his lips, his eyes darting around to see if anyone was looking at him.
"Just shut your hole. You'll find out soon enough."
Thomas took a deep breath and thought. If he expected the other boys to be honest, he should be honest too. He decided he'd better share about the possible maze code, maps or no maps.
"Minho, I need to tell you and Newt something. And we need to let Teresa out. She's probably starving, and we could use her help. That stupid girl is the last thing I'm worried about."
Thomas ignored the insult.
"Just give us a few minutes. We have an idea. Maybe it'll still work if enough runners remember their maps."
This seemed to get Minho's full attention, but again, there was the same strange look, as if Thomas was missing something very obvious.
"An idea? What?"
"Just come over to the slammer with me. You and Newt." Minho thought for a second.
"Newt!"
he called out.
"Yeah."
Newt stood up, refolding his bloody rag to find a clean spot. Thomas couldn't help noticing that every inch was drenched in red. Minho pointed down at Albie.
"Let the medjacks take care of him. We need to talk."
Newt gave him a questioning look, then handed the rag to the closest glader.
"Go find Clint. Tell him we got worse problems than guys with bogan splinters."
When the kid ran off to do as he was told, Newt stepped away from Albie.
"Talk about what?"
Minho nodded at Thomas, but didn't say anything.
"Just come with me," Thomas said.
Then he turned and headed for the slammer, without waiting for a response.
"Let her out."
Thomas stood by the cell door, arms folded.
"Let her out, and then we'll talk. Trust me, you want to hear it."
Newt was covered in soot and dirt, his hair matted with sweat. He certainly didn't seem to be in a very good mood.
Tommy, this is... Please, just open it. Let her out. Please.
He wouldn't give up this time. Minho stood in front of the door with his hands on his hips.
How can we trust her? He asked.
Soon as she woke up, the whole place fell to pieces. She even admitted she triggered something.
He's got a point, Newt said. Thomas gestured through the door at Teresa.
We can trust her. Every time I've talked to her, it's something about trying to get out of here. She was sent here just like the rest of us. It's stupid to think she's responsible for any of this.
Newt grunted.
What the bloody shuck did she mean by saying she triggered something?
Thomas shrugged, refusing to admit that Newt had a good point. There had to be an explanation.
Who knows? Her mind was doing all kinds of weird stuff when she woke up. Maybe we all went through that in the box, talking gibberish before we came totally awake. Just let her out.
Newt and Minho exchanged a long look.
Come on, Thomas insisted. What's she gonna do, run around and stab every glader to death? Come on.
Minho sighed.
Fine. Just let the stupid girl out. I'm not stupid, Teresa shouted, her voice muffled by the walls. And I can hear every word you morons are saying.
Newt's eyes widened.
Rare sweet girl you picked up, Tommy.
Just hurry, Thomas said. I'm sure we have a lot to do before the Grievers come back tonight, if they don't come during the day. Newt grunted and stepped up to the slammer, pulling his keys out as he did so. A few clinks later, the door swung wide open.
Come on.
Teresa walked out of the small building, glowering at Newt as she passed him. She gave a just as unpleasant glance toward Minho, then stopped to stand right next to Thomas. Her arm brushed against his. Tingles shot across his skin, and he felt mortally embarrassed.
All right, talk, Minho said. What's so important?
Thomas looked at Teresa, wondering how to say it.
What? She said. You talk. They obviously think I'm a serial killer.
Yeah, you look so dangerous, Thomas muttered, but he turned his attention to Newt and Minho.
Okay. When Teresa was first coming out of her deep sleep, she had memories flashing through her mind.
He just barely stopped himself from saying she'd said it inside his mind.
She told me later that she remembers that the maze is a code. That maybe instead of solving it to find a way out, it's trying to send us a message.
A code? Minho asked.
How's it a code?
Thomas shook his head, wishing he could answer.
I don't know for sure. You're way more familiar with the maps than I am. But I have a theory. That's why I was hoping you guys could remember some of them.
Minho glanced at Newt, his eyebrows raised in question. Newt nodded.
What?
Thomas asked, fed up with them keeping information from him.
You guys keep acting like you have a secret.
Minho rubbed his eyes with both hands, took a deep breath.
We hid the maps, Thomas.
At first it didn't compute.
Huh?
Minho pointed at the homestead.
We hid the freaking maps in the weapons room, put dummies in their place. Because of Albie's warning. And because of the so-called ending your girlfriend triggered.
Thomas was so excited to hear this news, he temporarily forgot how awful things had become. He remembered Minho acting suspicious the day before, saying he had a special assignment. Thomas looked over at Newt, who nodded.
They're all safe and sound, Minho said. Every last one of those suckers. So if you have a theory, get talking.
Take me to them, Thomas said, itching to have a look.
Okay, let's go.
Chapter 42 Minho switched on the light, making Thomas squint for a second until his eyes got used to it. Menacing shadows clung to the boxes of weapons scattered across the table and floor, blades and sticks and other nasty-looking devices seeming to wait there, ready to take on a life of their own and kill the first person stupid enough to come close. The dank, musty smell only added to the creepy feel of the room.
There's a hidden storage closet back here, Minho explained, walking past some shelves into a dark corner. Only a couple of us know about it.
Thomas heard the creak of an old wooden door, and then Minho was dragging a cardboard box across the floor. The scrape of it sounded like a knife on bone. I put each trunk's worth in its own box, 8 boxes total. They're all in there.
Which one is this? Thomas asked. He knelt down next to it, eager to get started.
Just open it and see. Each page is marked, remember?
Thomas pulled on the crisscrossed lid flaps until they popped open. The maps for Section 2 lay in a messy heap. Thomas reached in and pulled out a stack.
Okay, he said. The runners have always compared these day to day, looking to see if there was a pattern that would somehow help figure out a way to an exit. You even said you didn't really know what you were looking for, but you kept studying them anyway, right?
Minho nodded, arms folded. He looked as if someone were about to reveal the secret of immortal life.
Well, Thomas continued, what if all the wall movements had nothing to do with a map or a maze or anything like that? What if instead the pattern spelled words? Some kind of clue that'll help us escape.
Minho pointed at the maps in Thomas's hand, letting out a frustrated sigh.
Dude, you have any idea how much we've studied these things? Don't you think we would have noticed if it were spelling out freaking words? Maybe it's too hard to see with a naked eye, just comparing one day to the next. And maybe you weren't supposed to compare one day to the next, but look at it one day at a time.
Newt laughed.
Tommy, I might not be the sharpest guy in the glade, but sounds like you're talking straight out of your butt to me.
While he'd been talking, Thomas's mind had been spinning even faster. The answer was within his grasp. He knew he was almost there. It was just so hard to put it into words.
Okay, he said, starting over.
You've always had one runner assigned to one section, right?
Right, Minho replied. He seemed genuinely interested and ready to understand.
And that runner makes a map every day and then compares it to maps from previous days for that section.
What if instead you were supposed to compare the 8 sections to each other every day? Each day being a separate clue or code. Did you ever compare sections to other sections?
Minho rubbed his chin, nodding.
Yeah, kind of. We tried to see if they made something when put together. Of course we did that. We've tried everything.
Thomas pulled his legs up underneath him, studying the maps in his lap. He could just barely see the lines of the maze written on the second page through the page resting on top. In that instant, he knew what they had to do. He looked up at the others.
Wax paper.
Huh? Minho asked.
What the?
Just trust me. We need wax paper and scissors, and every black marker and pencil you can find. Frypan wasn't too happy having a whole box of his wax paper rolls taken away from him, especially with their supplies being cut off. He argued that it was one of the things he always requested, that he used it for baking. They finally had to tell him what they needed it for to convince him to give it up. After 10 minutes of hunting down pencils and markers, most had been in the map room and were destroyed in the fire, Thomas sat around the work table in the weapons basement with Newt, Minho, and Teresa. They hadn't found any scissors, so Thomas had grabbed the sharpest knife he could find.
This better be good, Minho said.
Warning laced his voice, but his eyes showed some interest. Newt leaned forward, putting his elbows on the table as if waiting for a magic trick.
Get on with it, Greenie.
Okay.
Thomas was eager to do so, but was also scared to death it might end up being nothing. He handed the knife to Minho, then pointed at the wax paper. Start cutting rectangles, about the size of the maps. Newt and Teresa, you can help me grab the first 10 or so maps from each section box.
What is this, kitty craft time?
Minho held up the knife and looked at it with disgust.
Why don't you just tell us what the clunk we're doing this for?
I'm done explaining, Thomas said, knowing they just had to see what he was picturing in his mind. He stood to go rummage through the storage closet.
It'll be easier to show you. If I'm wrong, I'm wrong, and we can go back to running around the maze like mice.
Minho sighed, clearly irritated, then muttered something under his breath. Teresa had stayed quiet for a while, but she spoke up inside Thomas's head.
I think I know what you're doing. Brilliant, actually.
Thomas was startled, but he tried his best to cover it up. He knew he had to pretend he didn't have voices in his head. The others would think he was a lunatic.
Just come help me, he tried to say back,
thinking each word separately, trying to visualize the message. Send it. But she didn't respond.
Teresa, he said aloud, can you help me a second?
He nodded toward the closet. The two of them went into the dusty